This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's STIRLINGsoap.com.
Pressed by Torres, the set, the kick, and the pitch. It's deep to left field. This one may be off the wall, maybe in the screen.
Lang and Chernyshev on top as expected. They're eligible for Salt Lake City.
Indian All-Star.
This is Bill Black with the Indian All-Stars podcast. I am here with Aragon Star, creative genius extraordinaire. There isn't probably very many creative fields that Aragon is not involved in, and I can't wait to hear about all of that stuff. Our biggest point that we're talking about today is new book that came out. Aragon worked with author Tracy Sorrell. It is called Contenders, about the 1911 World Series with two of my Indian All-Stars teammates here, Charles Albert Bender and John Tortus Myers. And it's a really cool book. You need to go get it right now. So let's jump into this.
All right.
I gave you a little brief, hopefully not too hyperbolic introduction, but tell us a little bit about you, about your background, about all the stuff that you do in a nutshell.
Sure. It's going to be a big nut.
I know.
And that's probably all. A whole bag of peanuts.
Well, it's baseball. We got time.
That's right. We got time. We got about at least 2.5 hours, right? Well, just to introduce myself, I'm Aragon Star, and I was born in Pensacola, Florida, random place, not a place for Kickapoos, except my dad was in the Navy. That's and it. I was born on the road as he was an enlisted man traveling with his family. And we further traveled the United States. Home base, though, I live in Los Angeles, but my heart's in Oklahoma. Okay. And I just want people to know that my dad grew up in Shawnee, Oklahoma. My mother is enrolled Muscogee Creek, and she grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And they met while going to Oklahoma Baptist University. Wow. So, you know, and they just said, hey, let's start a family. Let's roll. There's not many opportunities for a, you know, up and coming. These were great parents. I just have to tell you right off the bat. And I also had a wonderful sister named Gay Lynn. And we were the best of friends. And all throughout my life, my mother, it was my mother, not my dad, although he did love baseball. It's my mother that loved baseball. And she introduced us to the game. We watched the game all throughout our lives. And eventually, my dad's tour of duty took us to San Diego, California. And at that time, the San Diego Padres had just started. I mean, this is like the early 70s. So, you know, that we finally got to see major league games. My mom was thrilled. We were Padre fans growing up, although you see what I'm wearing, right? You see what, I mean, it's the evil empire, right?
Did that make you itch at a least, little bit?
But right now, you know, I've lived in Los Angeles for so many years. I feel like this is kind of where I grew up, you know, at least my adult life. So all of that traveling, all that life brought me here to Los Angeles to work in the entertainment business, first as, you know, behind the scenes. And then I got a few years into it. And then I said, you know what? I need to be on the other side of those cameras. I need to be on the other side of this. I'm a musician, a singer, songwriter. I've played coffee houses, recorded CDs, put them out, had them played on the radio. They still could play it on the radio. And toured United States, toured in England. I've toured in Australia. And through that experience led me to the theater, working with Native Voices at the Autry in Los Angeles. The Autry, of course, is Gene Autry, owner of the Angels, who has a museum here that's Western heritage, Western history, which includes us folks, you know, so we're well represented at the Autry. And so this theater initiative brought forth acting talents and then playwriting talents. So I was also on stage and performing as an actor and then incorporating music and then eventually coming to a radio series called Super Indian. And the challenge there was, can you write a 10-minute script for an audio theater festival, West Plains, Missouri? We're going to broadcast on NPR. What do you think? And I was like, okay, yeah, let's do this. So I wrote the 10-minute script about a reservation boy who eats tainted commodity cheese and gains superpowers. And that's how I came. And Bill, that is how I became a comic book artist, because I'd always drawn comics through my entire life. I was always doing artwork, always drawing. And I took the love of comics and then really did some hard studying, because, you know, you read them, you don't really think about how's that put together? How is that put together? So studied
so much thought,
and then
so much work.
Yeah.
Tell that visual story. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Exactly. So that led me to doing comics. So Super Indian started as a web comic and then evolved into a printed book, actually two printed books. So that work brought me to other comic creators. I've done other projects. Tales of the Mighty Co-Talkers is out there. That was an anthology series with a number of other different comic artists that were about the different tribes that participated in the co-talking program. Because everybody knows, oh, it's the Navajos, right? It's like, no.
No,
I mean, yes, it is them. Yes, it is them. However, you know, there were other tribes involved. So we highlighted the Choctaw, the Creek, the Comanche, the Kiowa. And so that book came out. And then there was this online challenge that kept coming up in my feed, you know, being in the comic world, which was called Inktober. They don't have it anymore. It became kind of controversial. But the prompt is always, draw an image a day for October. Now for me, because I'm a baseball fan, October is always the World Series, the playoffs, the World Series, right?
How many pictures of Reggie Jackson can you draw, though? I mean,
you know what I did, because, you know, I'm a Dodger fan now, right? And I started drawing Dodgers, and I post them online.
Excellent.
And through those pieces of artwork led me to Tracy Sorrell. And she said, I know you're Native and you love baseball. I've got this idea for a book. And I said, what's the story? Have you ever heard of the 1911 World Series? And I said, no. And then she told me who the players were. I said, oh, I didn't realize that happened. Oh,
Pretty cool, right?
So, yeah. And a lot of us don't know that, who are baseball fans.
Sure.
And natives. We don't know this story. So that I'm just saying. Well, that's how this all came to be.
I love it. Because that was a question I was going to ask, and you beat me to the punch on that, and that's fabulous, because I love it when it comes organically. So let's talk about that process, working with Tracy and the research and finding the imagery. Did you know about Charles Bender or John Myers before?
I did.
Okay. All right, good.
Yeah.
Because that's part of my whole Indian All-Stars mission, is to promote and bring back the memory of these great, great native athletes, right?
Right.
And present them to the youth of today. So this book is right in that wheelhouse, and, you know, more power to you guys for doing this, because this is brilliant.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about the process of working through this and creating this great visual reference and remembrance that young people today can check out.
Well, one thing that was really important to me is Tracy had already done a lot of the research for her writing and shared those notes with me, which was fantastic. So when I got her script, which was, the limited text that's in the book is always supported by, okay, wait, this is kind of what I think it should look like. Mm-hmm. And then that vision was also supported by the excellent Jasmine Ribeiro at Coquila Books. Jasmine also loves baseball. So think there's three women already involved in this that are like, oh, that's our game, man. That's what we live baseball. And she was able to say, okay, but what about this? And make sure that play is correct, and that, you know, if that ball's hit out to left field, you know, who's in motion, who's ready. And I thought, yes, I mean, just stuff like that where it's like you're trying to create a scene of the polo grounds, which does not exist anymore.
Right.
Thank goodness there are a lot of representation, like archival photos of the polo grounds in New York City before and after. And because in 1911, it burnt down.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the stadium burnt down, but they quickly rebuilt it. And, it was a setting for this amazing contest between, you know, what was Indian versus Indian. But, you know, and they tried to make it like, you know, so stereotypical and just so like, you know, they grabbed their war tomahawks and la, la, la. It's these guys loved each other. They were friends.
How's that? And, that was a pretty small group of Native American guys playing baseball at that time, right? At that level,
exactly.
Just a handful of people, and you think that they're,
that they're going to go after each other.
Antagonistic? No, they're pals. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to do their best, obviously, and somebody has to, you know, be victorious here. But, you know, they did their best, and they were cordial to each other, which shocked the press. It's like, what? Wait a minute. This is right. Yeah. And craziness. But in any case, that was the research that I started with. Uh-huh. And then I had to do deep dives into their, I want to say regalia, but that's not right for baseball. They're, you know, their uniforms.
Yeah.
Because they were completely different. And their gear, their catcher's gear, the baseballs, the bats, the base. I mean, just the lay, everything was just a little bit different than it is now.
It looks different, totally different. Particularly, boy, the catcher's gear and the gloves that they were using.
Yes.
Totally different. Boy, I couldn't imagine. I was reading the thing about John Myers, where, and he was an Iron Man catcher. He was Cal Ripken for the catchers. And
yes,
he'd go out, his hands are bleeding and broken bones in his hands and stuff, and still go out and catch a game, things that would knock guys out for months in today's world. He's out there in the next. What a tough dude.
Yeah, wow. That was kind of like last night with Shohei Ohtani and his broken nail.
Yeah.
Oh,
Right?
okay. Oh, my God. No, I love Shohei. Don't, yeah. No shade on Shohei, but just, yeah.
Brilliant.
I'm playing
brilliant.
With broken fingers and
yeah, what
got
a
nail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, sorry.
I digress. In any case, it was a lot of internet search. There are so many databases out there where if you're an artist and you're not accurately representing a time or a place, shame on you. There, just search the pictures. The all of the resource things were there. I just had to go find them, and it did take some time. And then after that research was incorporated, I started the layout of the book, and there were 48 pages of art in mm-hmm. that book. It wasn't just a like, I'll just draw some little squiggles. And just,
no,
I couldn't
well,
get away with
full,
that.
Full rendered illustrations that are all brilliant. And I have to commend you. One thing that for those of you who have not yet bought the book, but you're going to, right? I want to point out that when Charles Bender is being represented and talking about his youth and his growing up, the imagery, the borders, the treatments around are all geographically and culturally appropriate to the Northeastern style of design, of Native American art. And then when we talk about John Myers, it is very, very drastically different and also culturally and geographically appropriate. I think that's fabulous. That's great research and great representation.
Thank you. And again, because, you know, I work in this artistic world, because of all of the stuff that I do, I was also a Tulsa Artists Fellow from 2017 to 2019. And one of the women that I met there is Molly Murphy Adams. And Molly's, she is like a world-class beater. I mean, just, you know, you see her stuff in Reservation Dogs and everywhere. But she has that heritage, Ojibwe Lakota heritage that I said, can I do this? I asked her. I went to cultural people that do the work. I said, can I do this? Is this okay? And she looked at it and she said, oh, yeah. That's totally, that would happen. And the same with living in Los Angeles and knowing people that, you know, Sherman Indian School is still around. There are, and local people here, Lorreen Sisquak, an elder, she guided me on that artwork. For the basketry for Mr. Myers.
Fabulous representations.
Thank you. I had help.
That's something I'm going to follow up with you on email on, because I'm involved with another thing that's talking about that very thing, about finding people to talk about or to talk with about visual reference. Actually, let's just jump into it. Like I said, I'm an art teacher. We're working on I'm in a group that is working on a proposal for the next National Art Educators Association conference that'll be in Minnesota next year, about culturally appropriate lesson plans when we're talking about art, and particularly Native American and Native Alaskan art. How do we find out, how do people that aren't of Native culture, how do they go about finding people to make sure that they're planning a lesson? Is this culturally appropriate? Is this something that we should be doing? Are these images correct to use? That kind of thing. So when you say that you, who's been raised in this whole thing, still needed to go find out, is this cool? Is this not cool? That is very, very important and very topical in today's world, right?
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't want to write about another tribe and just kind of like, I wouldn't. Yeah. Yeah, I would not want to. It's like, well, I knew a Navajo guy once who blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, ask. And if it's not appropriate, let's say, you know, I got an idea for you guys.
Right.
I'm just going to give it to you. I'm not doing it because that's not my story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that is we just had our first meeting and drafted up our first kind of plans for the presentation yesterday. So it's interesting that that comes up. So sorry, I digress again, but it's kind of an important thought.
It's so important because all kinds of lines are crossed in mainstream media with this. And I especially see it with, like, I'm just going to say it. I'm putting it on record. The Marvel comics. You know, they just hire whomever and expect them to, like, oh, fill in the blank on the tribe that's being represented.
Right.
You know, I just, you know, they've got, I think, two issues out, the Native Voices Marvel. I don't know. They never asked me. So maybe I'm being bitter Betty, but, you know, it's just like, I don't like what they're doing.
No, I mean, and, you know, they're mainstream, trying to appeal to everybody kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And who's going to challenge them with the Skrulls? Because you don't know where the Skrulls came from, right? But
exactly.
You know where we came from, right? I mean, so it's kind of a different thing. That's a good point.
Yeah. So, you know, you see this in, you know, comics, films, television, etc. It's a mishmash, you mm-hmm. know, it's like, well, I can't watch Yellowstone or any of those. It's like, oh, come on.
It takes a little bit of a whole bunch of stuff and mush it all together. And that's the way everybody is, right?
Yeah. That's Indian, right? It's pan Indian. That has always happened. And it bugs me so much.
Yeah. Yeah. That was something that came up in the conversation yesterday. Was there are so many different, I don't know if you want to call them microcultures or whatever. I live in Washington here, and I'm in Eastern Washington, and I mostly grew up in Western Washington, and there are a whole mess of tribes over there that are all different, not a whole bunch, not a whole big number of people, but each culture is drastically different. Over on this side of the mountains, not so different. Language is the same. A lot of the stuff was the same. Get over on the other side, and a lot of stuff is different. And when we try and hodgepodge and mold that all together, it just doesn't work.
Oh, yeah. I can't even, you know, I'm trying to think, Mr. Muckleshoot, meet Mr. Yakima. You know, it's like, okay.
Yeah,
we're all native, but
yep, but different foods, different. Yeah,
so different. You know, and I even think about my own tribes, because the Muscogee Creek are so different than the Kickapoo. You know, and yet here I am. Ah! Yeah.
Interesting, right?
Yeah.
And then when we're represented in you know, mass media as, well, this is the Indian way.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Enough of that. Let's get back to the book.
Okay.
And then I want to talk about Super Indian.
So
okay. I'm on the free Zoom. I may have to call you back.
I'll try to keep it short then.
Okay.
Short and punchy.
So in the book, all of the illustration spreads are brilliant. I just want to know, do you have a favorite one? Do you have one that really you say, yes, I made that, and it
the is cover. Awesome. I love the cover art, because I loved how they made that, the fold out, and you can see that detailed drawing of the top of the polo grounds. And then, yes, the cover, the whole thing. It goes all the way around. It's beautiful. Yeah, love that.
Something I like, I just have to say, that on the interior pages, when we're talking about their
childhood, yes.
Their childhood, the photo album pages.
Yes,
I love the photo album holder where you slide the fold. Mm-hmm. Kids these days have no clue what that is, but it looks so cool and so nostalgic.
Bill, don't you have one of those?
I absolutely do.
I know it was my auntie's, and it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Several of them. My grandpa had many of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, kudos again. That's brilliant. It's timely, and it holds on to a tradition that is kind of being lost because now everybody looks at their pictures here.
Exactly. On your phone. It's like, oh, okay, great.
Not the same.
No.
Yeah. So anyway, so the cover is your favorite.
Yes.
As I was leading up to this, I tried to go through and pick them, but I can't because I think they're all great. I love it.
Fantastic. That and the baseball card page.
Yeah, that's
the baseball with the protesters, because that kind of went through some things.
Yeah, tell
because it was a little, you know, I was very pointed with the art that I originally made, and in fact, one of the protesters was in that war paint.
Yeah,
you know, that the fans would wear at the Cleveland game. So I was like, and they were like, "Oh, that's I don't know if we want kids to see that." And I'm like, come on. You go to a Chiefs game and see that.
Yeah.
It's like, right? Or go see Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So, oh, well, it got X'd. And instead, the kids were doing the selfie in front of the protest because that's what people do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So what is your, do you think there's more of this type of thing coming down the pipe for you, do you think?
I do not know at this time. Yeah. I don't have any other book or children's books projects lined up.
Okay.
But that's curious. Okay. That's okay with me. I'm working on Super Indian Volume 3.
Excellent. I want to get to that in a second. I'm going to throw out another from my long list of Indian All-Stars. I mean, as a general manager of the Indian All-Stars team, I have a lot of people to keep track of. And another couple head-to-head Indian All-Star matchups, just to throw these out there. Jim Plunkett and Sonny Sixkiller faced off for a chance to go to the Rose Bowl in 1970, yeah. So there's a whole other storyline for you. Just
indeed. I still have that Sports Illustrated cover with Sonny on the cover.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Such a fan.
I'm working hard to get him on the podcast too. Local guy here in Seattle. Mm-hmm. Fans, so,
You know, I love the dogs. I love those dogs.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
We got a connection going here, sister.
We do. We do. Oh, yes.
And then another one that's actually the anniversary of it's coming up, or maybe is it just passed yesterday, I think. Tommy Morrison and Joe Hip, heavyweight boxers.
Ooh.
Both native dudes.
Wow.
Elimination fight back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting when those kind of things present themselves, at least to me, because, wow, here, just like this story, I mean, this was at the pinnacle. It's not like Joe Hip and Tommy Morrison met for the heavyweight championship. That'd be a whole different story. But still, Indian guys, at the top level, getting together and putting on a show, I think is great. So
anyway, yes.
I digressed again, but now let's jump into Super Indian.
Okay, let's.
It's not necessarily sports stuff, but it's native stuff, art stuff. I love it. I love the radio show. I listen to it a bunch of times. So.
Yeah, I love.
5 minutes on the Zoom. Okay. If we had to redo it, I can send you another invite and we can patch it together. So
okay,
but I don't want a short Super Indian. That's not fair.
Okay, so this kid, Hubert Logan, is also Super Indian. He is a janitor at the bingo hall, and he has a talking dog named Dog.
Dog.
That Dog. Because all res dogs are named DOG.
That's right.
he also ate the tainted commodity cheese and has superpowers himself, including very intelligent mind and the power of speech. However, only Super Indian can hear him. And one more sidekick, because you got to have another sidekick, General Bear, who has no powers at all, but just a good heart. Big guy puts on the tights, becomes mega bear. Still no powers and a good heart. And they just solve issues on the reservation. They're under constant attack from their nemesis wampum bags. You know, it's just craziness and it's just silliness. And I think one of my favorite readings I ever did was at the Denver Comic Con, or actually it was Indigenous Comic Con. And I was sitting there and one of the guys that was there was, what's his name? Eugene Brave Rock, the actor guy. And some other Indians were sitting around and I was like reading from one of the comic book scripts about a description of a powwow that's in volume 3, which is like, oh, here comes Chief for Life. Oh, he's wearing a big bolo. His back is going to hurt. Oh, paging Bengay, you know. And they were just cracking up because it was like, and then somebody commented, they said, that is the most Indian thing I have ever heard.
Absolutely.
And I love it because that's the representation I want to see in comics. I mean, he's got superpowers and there's bing, bang, biff, baff, bo, you know, which kind of have to have. But it's also filled with our humor, filled with the love of our community because, you know, Hubert's got both of his parents. He's got his grandma. He's got his uncle, his cousins, because that's kind of how we are, right? You know, at least in my family anyway. Sure. I mean, not everybody has that experience, but that's what I wanted to put into the book, that there was a love of community, a concern for community, and that he doesn't need the big bright lights. I mean, yeah, he'd probably like that, but he's a fanboy himself and he likes kung fu and, you know, action movies, and, you know, he's just a kid.
Sure.
You know, so we don't have to go big and, you know, solve, you know, the world's problems. He's just concerned with the reservation right now.
Got enough to deal with there.
Well, that's enough.
I love it.
And
love it.
Again, I do all the artwork. I write all the scripts. I do all the design for the books. And it's been really hard work, but a joy to bring forth into the world.
That's excellent. So you're on your third
book, yeah.
Coming out. Yeah, that's fabulous.
Yes. Yeah, and kids, if you're listening, Photoshop can be your friend. So can Adobe Illustrator and InDesign for the production of the book. There are several books, including a whole DC series that talks about writing, penciling, inking, and digital drawing and coloring as well. And if you want to learn how to color, Brian and Christy Miller's Hi-Fi Color for Comics is the best, because that will quickly get you to where a place where you can drop color into your books. And there's all kinds of other help online. Retro Supply has great brushes. Fonts, Comic Craft, Blambot. You don't have to make this stuff up. It's out there. We all use that stuff and it's great. And it makes our work look professional.
That is fabulous. That I may hit you up for when we're out of school now, but when we start school next year, I may hit you up to talk to my commercial art kids.
I would love to talk to them about this stuff because we need more representation in the comics. We need to make our own comics and not live or die by Marvel and DC, because we already have the stories. We just need to sharpen up our art skills and print our own books, because there's even like down in Paula, California, Tribal Print Source. That's a tribally owned, you know, publishing press. They, you know, they're great. They do. You can send your book down there and get it printed by Indians.
That's great, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we fit a whole bunch in. There's probably a whole lot more we can talk about, and we'll save that for another time. But boy, I sure have enjoyed this, and I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day and being able to roll with me on the front end when we had the technical delay.
But, not a problem.
I would love to catch up with you again down the road, and definitely for art class, if nothing else. But hopefully when you make your next sports book, we can talk about the, I'm not sports book, but.
Or just anything, because you never know anything. What I'm going to do.
That's right.
You never know.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, good luck with Contenders. Good luck with all of your other endeavors.
Yes.
And again, thank you very much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
You betcha, Bill. And thank you all listeners, Indian All-Stars Podcast. Good on you.
All right. Thanks. I'll see you.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.